So I'm gonna be completely straight up with you. I was 50-50 on even releasing today's show. I'm tired, and I think it's a little bit because of my sleep, but also, how is it March again? Remember when we were like, man, this is gonna be a weird couple of weeks. And then the clothes that we wear every day just slowly turned into, how can I also make it feel like I'm still in bed? And I've got hope. I think there's a light right around the corner. I've also been very privileged enough with my job and my living situation, but it is still heavy on my mind. So if I feel out of it today, let's blame that. Also, please do not in any way pity me. I things are good other than up here. If anything, my hope in sharing this is you don't feel alone if you have similar feelings because you don't. Anyway, let's jump into the news. And first up today, let's talk about this troubling situation around James Charles. So if you haven't seen, there's a story that blew up about a 16-year-old boy who accused YouTuber James Charles of grooming, saying that James sent him nude photos. Right, and so the accuser, who goes by Isaiah on Twitter and RedZai on TikTok, where he has 200,000 followers, he posted the accusations and videos on both platforms, and both platforms have actually removed them, but re-uploads still exist on YouTube. And so he basically says that they started talking on Snapchat on February 17th with him hoping that it would be just kind of a fan talking to an influencer kind of conversation. But then things allegedly turned rather sexual with him sharing some of the messages that James allegedly sent him, including one where James appears to have asked him to send a video from the shower while he flexed his muscles. Also another with graphic sexual language with him also including censored nude and partially nude photos that James allegedly sent to him. And with this, Isaiah said he told James that he was only 16, but that he still kept asking for pictures. With him also claiming that James asked to FaceTime him and saying of this whole situation,
I've heard multiple stories about him doing this to people, but you never believe it until it happens to you. So now I'm a big believer of what James Charles does to other people.
Now, as far as James's response to this, he said that Isaiah's story is false, saying that he was under the impression that Isaiah was 18, not 16, calling the grooming accusation completely false, claiming that he found Isaiah on the Instagram Explore page, saw that Isaiah followed him, and then decided to add him on Snapchat. With him then saying he woke up to snaps of him being very excited as well as lewd photos of him. And saying, I asked how old he was right away, and he told me he was 18, so I started flirting back, but did not ask for any ID to confirm his age. With him going on to say, it's now clear based on the video he uploaded, he was taking photos of me with another device and had an ulterior motive from the beginning. Later in the day, he said a few things that made me question the validity of his original age answer, and when I asked him to confirm his age once again, he admitted he was 16. I told him I was really uncomfortable and apologized for flirting, but he insisted on continuing talking, saying it could be our little secret, he's a fan of mine, and would never tell anyone. I told him I wasn't okay with this, he started getting upset, and at this point I unfriended him. We haven't spoken since. Also, saying that he's not trying to victim blame or even make himself a victim, he's just trying to share his side of the story, especially because he has faced similar allegations in the past. With him also saying that he will now ask for the ID of every guy he has a conversation with to confirm their age. But Isaiah has since responded in several tweets insisting that James knew that he was 16, writing, James, we both know I blocked you. You never asked for my age. After I told you I was 16, you proceeded to ask me for nudes and said it didn't matter. You called me hot and said I wish the timeline could speed up so you can be 18. If you're gonna text someone, make sure you know their age. With him also saying that he is contacting the police about this. Also, as we see happen with situations like this, since this story broke, at least two other people have come forward with their own stories about James. And while I'm looking into those, I won't be going into them now. Right, some of the situations are different. They're developing. For example, there was someone that came out with a story that they were 17 when James flirted with them, saying that it never got sexual. Right, and then you see that it looks like those tweets have been removed. So the question of why, who did it, what does it mean for the story? But what I can say is that we reached out to James Charles to see if he had any updated comment, any replies that he'd like to say. We have not heard back from him yet, but we did see him reply to someone today who said that he couldn't WhatsApp his way out of the situation, with James replying, I'm not trying to get out of anything. No matter what happened, it was unacceptable, embarrassing, and I should have taken the extra steps to research the person I was talking to. There is no excuse. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. This is on me. But that is where we are with this story right now, and I would love to know your thoughts on this situation. Then, in other celebrity news we can talk about, we had Taylor Swift in the news, though it kind of goes past just another celebrity story. It's kind of just the continuation of this conversation we've seen happening through news stories over the last few weeks that has largely been focused on how people, the media, entertainment treat women who are famous. Right, so the way this recent news goes, you had Netflix releasing a new original series called Ginny in Georgia, which has sparked outrage among Taylor Swift's fans. And this because in one of the episodes, the character Georgia asks her daughter Ginny if she has broken up with her boyfriend, to which Ginny replies, what do you care? You go through men faster than Taylor Swift. As the people see it, someone posts it, it spreads like wildfire. We see the phrase "respect Taylor Swift" begin to trend on Twitter. It also prompts fans to point to a 2017 episode of Degrassi Next Class, which is also co-produced by Netflix along with other companies, and in that episode, a character says Taylor Swift made an entire career off of her exes. Right? And for many fans, these types of jokes are especially frustrating because Swift herself has long been critical of the narrative and sexism in general. Right? She's addressed it in several interviews, songs, and even her own Netflix documentary, Miss Americana. In one interview saying, "If I could talk to my 19-year-old self, I'd just say, hey, you know, you're gonna date just like a normal 20-something should be allowed to, but you're going to be a national lightning rod for slut-shaming." And in fact, with this situation specifically, Taylor weighed in herself this morning, tweeting, "Hey, Ginny in Georgia, 2010 called and it wants its lazy, deeply sexist joke back. How about we stop degrading hardworking women by defining this horseshit as funny? Also, Netflix, after Miss Americana, this outfit doesn't look cute on you. Happy Women's History Month, I guess." And with this story, I would really love to know your thoughts, because depending on where you see people talking about this, greatly different reactions. Right, some saying this is yet another example of slut-shaming famous female celebrities, right, saying that it is disgusting and called for, there is a double standard. But on the other end, you have some people saying it's just jokes. Right, saying that Taylor Swift's relationships have been in the public eye, they're a part of her music, so they should be fair game. Though that also opens up the other debate with Taylor Swift in a relationship. Right, some have said and joked that Taylor Swift gets into these relationships so she can make music about them. But you have people saying, no, that's actually just one of Taylor Swift's skills. She's in the public eye, people are gonna speculate and say things anyway, this is her like superpower. But like I said, I pass the question off to you, and I'd love to know what you're thinking and why. And then let's talk about Syria, because on Friday, the US military conducted an airstrike on an Iranian-backed militia in Syria. According to reports, the airstrike was conducted as retaliation after the militia launched rockets into northern Iraq and killed civilians, contractors, and injured a US service member and other coalition troops. But despite airstrikes having been a routine response in this situation over the last 20 years, the decision drew instant backlash, because this is the first such strike of Biden's presidency, and for many, it set the tone and seemed to contradict some of his earlier stances when running for office. For example, back in 2019, he made it rather clear that he wanted to get out of Iraq as soon as possible and Afghanistan soon, but such airstrikes are often blamed for further entrenching the United States in the region. And it's hard to sum up the different criticisms that Biden received for this decision, as essentially the entire political spectrum pushed back against this move and only a few approved of it. I mean, for example, starting with Congress, many Democrats called the move unconstitutional, though that not too surprising, as in the past, Nancy Pelosi claimed that similar strikes required congressional approval, something the Biden administration pushed back on, citing the War Powers Act, which has been used by presidents to justify the use of force without congressional approval. And that is one of the few areas that he received support, as many Republicans praised the decision to retaliate against militias who target U.S. personnel in the region. But also, in the public eye, many mocked Biden's apprehension over expanding executive power to forgive student loans, but he seemingly was comfortable using it to bomb militias. We also saw others pushing back against the idea from the administration that this was a form of defensive retaliation, writing things like, "The latest Biden airstrike is being spun as, quote, defensive and retaliatory, despite its targeting a nation the U.S. invaded, Syria, in response to alleged attacks on U.S. forces in another nation the U.S. invaded, Iraq. You can't invade a nation and then claim self-defense there, ever." You also had many critiquing how the media portrayed the event by claiming that they treated Biden much more softly than they would with Trump, or with people essentially saying you get the same end result with a Trump or a Biden in this situation, a U.S. bombing, but the media coverage is different because, what, he didn't call the country a shithole country? I'll also say this isn't the only story we have today that hits on this note, right? And this because on Friday, the Biden administration declassified a report from earlier this month that found that the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, aka Mohammed Bonesaw, he in fact approved the killing of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi back in 2018, which was shocking news to no who is surprised. But yeah, this long-awaited report, which supports findings from numerous international organizations, found that an elite team of operatives who helped carry out the brutal murder dismemberment of the outspoken journalist reported directly to MBS. But also very notably, the Biden administration also said that it would not directly punish MBS because doing so would risk hurting relations with the kingdom, which are key to a number of strategic alliances in the region, and whose leaders the US also fear would be pushed towards China if they cut ties. And instead, the administration has announced travel and financial sanctions on other Saudis involved in the killing and members of the Royal Guard. And so while yes, many top lawmakers on both sides appraised the Biden administration for declassifying the report, which is a stark contrast to Trump, who brushed aside reports from US intelligence agencies on the matter, they also condemned Biden for not taking direct action against MBS and pressed him to do more. With this, including Representative Adam Schiff, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, who spoke out against the administration's decision in his column in the Washington Post, writing, "There are ways to bring about more personal repercussions without completely rupturing the relationship. This is an official U.S. government statement that the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia has blood on his hands, and that blood belongs to an American resident and journalist. I think that's very powerful." But at the same time, we also saw some senators saying that they think Biden will ultimately do more, right? which is also something that White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki also hinted at over the weekend, telling reporters behind the scenes there are a range of diplomatic conversations that make absolutely clear to the Saudis and others around the world that this is going to be a different kind of relationship. To which, my response is, I'll believe it when I see it, Jen. Behind the scenes conversations feels appropriate for, I don't know, a plethora of things, and then there's a line, and then way the hell past that line is the murder of an American resident. Right, so let me be clear here. I am glad that Donald Trump is no longer president. I think he was one of the worst. I think he threatened democracy. But Joe, that also doesn't mean that you're not a hypocrite and a pussy in this situation. America either stands for something or it doesn't. And your inaction, or rather your weak actions in this moment, give credence to critics who say that in a situation like this, you're just like Trump, but with different window dressing. We knew that Trump didn't give a shit about Khashoggi's murder, that the relationship, and probably more importantly, the arms deal with Saudi Arabia, far more important to him. But what we're seeing from the Biden administration thus far in this situation is barely better. You acknowledge that Mohamed Bonesaw has blood on his hands, and so let's punish low-level players in the conspiracy that we're reporting to him? And then maybe there's gonna be some harsh words behind the scenes. That's how America becomes a beacon of human rights. But yeah, I'd love to know your thoughts on these, especially because both of these stories represent some of the first major foreign policy actions that Biden has taken. And I'd really love to know where you stand, why, any and all thoughts you have on this topic. I'd love to see those comments down below. And that is where I'm going to end today's show. As always, thank you for being a part of my daily dives in the news. Subscribe and hitting that like button, all the good stuff. If you're looking for more to watch, maybe you missed the last Philip DeFranco show, or you should check out the podcast I did with Matt Mercer. It'll maybe hold you over until we have Markiplier on next week. But with that said, of course, as always, my name is Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces, and I'll see you tomorrow.